Welcome back, alchemists, to another episode of Elemental Educator. On this episode, I'm thrilled to introduce Sam Cozen. Sam, way back when, went to Encounters with Canada with me. What a crazy but fun experience and just a great way to meet people. Who knew down the road we'd be sitting here doing a podcast together on education? Sam shares her unexpected journey from teaching high school to embracing the challenges of an elementary classroom. Sam's story is a testament to adaptability and the profound impact of understanding educational dynamics at different levels. I really hope you enjoy this episode, so sit back, relax, and enjoy.
This is the Elemental Educator, the podcast where we kindle the fires of dialogue with the alchemists of education. We're here to embark on a journey where ancient wisdom meets the contemporary world of education. On Elemental Educator, we dive into the deep waters of adaptability, feel the grounding earth of core values, ride the swift winds of change, and ignite the fiery spirit of risk-taking. Fire, earth, wind, water. This is the Elemental Educator, and now your host, Tyler Como.
All right, alchemists, welcome back to another episode of Elemental Educator. I'm so excited to be here with Sam Cozen today. Sam, thanks for joining me.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So Sam, before we kick off today, why don't you tell us a little bit about who you are and how you got to where you are in education?
So currently I am in a position I never thought I would be in, teaching elementary 5-6 English and math. And I never wanted anything to do with elementary and I never wanted anything to do with math, but here we are. I kind of got to this position because after being in education for about 3-4 years, I took a break from it and I was just subbing the last year. And then a position opened up at a school where I was subbing at for quite a while and they just offered it to me. So it was nice to not interview for it. And they just were like, hey, we got this if you want it. So I thought, why not try something new?
Wow. That's quite the journey. And after that, it's been really easy the whole way. Hey,
no, not one bit.
It never is. So what kind of challenges did you face in the grade 5-6 classroom?
Elementary just in general is so hard to kind of go back on after being in high school, right? Because high school kids want to be independent. They want to work by themselves. They don't want the teacher's help, right? And elementary students are the exact opposite. They all crave, need that individual attention. Like I will explain at the front of the room an assignment that we're doing. I give them instructions written with the assignments. I ask for questions at the front of the room. I feel like we're all good to go. We break to go do the project or whatever it is. They all have questions. They're all at my desk. They all need help. It's like, none of you had questions like 5 minutes ago. But I would say that their dependency is the biggest thing to navigate for me.
Yeah. And you know what? That happens a bit in the high school too. I still teach some high school classes here and that need for dependence is quite strong. But how did you make that transition and what mindset did you have to shift to go from, okay, we're teaching high school and we're working with a certain type of kids that have a certain brain development. Now we're working with elementary kids whose brains are totally different.
I needed to check my ego at the door, I guess. Like I was so used to thinking I was a good teacher because high school students, you explain it, they got it, they go. And I mean, don't get me wrong. There's always some kids that have questions and stuff, but you go through that process and explain it. And I really needed to go back to like the fundamentals of teaching and education and think about how to give directions, how to differentiate, how to explain in multiple ways. And that just was never really an issue, especially like in high school, I taught phys ed and English. So, you know, phys ed's pretty easy to get by and explain and stuff. And I find I'm pretty natural at English. And so just going back and needing to like reframe my way of thinking and how to teach was a bit of a struggle. And to not get upset with the kids, I found that my patience was very low. And there would be some days where class would be over and I would sit back and reflect and be like, oh my God, I'm an asshole. Like, because I would just get so annoyed at the amount of questions and them not comprehending things. And have to remind myself like how young they are and how much they don't know yet and how much they need somebody to care and explain and slow things down for them. So it's kind of a lot there, but yeah, I need to learn a lot.
That sounds like learning, but learning maybe the hard way, if I'm understanding that correct. So what kind of things did you practice or how did you shift your mindset and prepare yourself to enter that room every day to approach those situations where you had to be maybe a bit more empathetic with those kids and a bit more caring towards them?
I had to really take a look at what they were doing, not only in my class, but in other classes, just to like, for me to really grasp how old they are and what their capabilities are and what they understand and what their levels are, because I also think it's changed so much from when we were in elementary school. Like I remember writing in grade three a 3-page book report, and it was kind of like the biggest assignment of the year in grade three, and you wrote this handwritten 3-page book report. And these kids now have trouble just writing a single paragraph. And so I just feel like we've taken a step back in what our expectations are in elementary. And so I went in just thinking of what I needed to know when I was their age. So then I think that that's also why I was getting frustrated, because I'm like, oh my God, these kids are behind. But then when reflecting on what the curriculum is asking now, they are pretty much on par, but we're just asking so much less of them than when we were in elementary school.
Expectations have definitely changed a ton. And one thing I'll transition to there with that is I follow you on your social medias, and we'll share those after and get you out to the world a bit more too. But I've noticed that this has probably impacted your development along the way as well. And so as much as the impact you're making on these kids, how did this shift impact you in discovering who you are?
I think it's making, that's not a good word. I think it's shaped me to be a lot softer. And I think in a good way. I think I always kind of had a bit of a barrier in a sense, because in high school, you don't want to be too vulnerable, right? Because the kids just aren't the same. They'll take something and run with it, and they're not afraid to, like, you know, make fun of teachers or get things going and stuff. So I was always pretty careful with, you know, how I interacted with them and just tried to be professional and stuff. And not that I don't try to be professional with the elementary kids, but they don't respond as well to that. You know, like I've noticed on days where I get a little tense or like annoyed or frustrated with them that, you know, they don't come and talk to you, or they don't ask questions. And sometimes, you know, like that feels like a break, but that's not a good thing. We want these kids to be able to approach us and to, you know, ask questions and tell us what's bothering them and things like that. So I've grown to just like kind of let my guards down a little bit and just have more conversations with them and yeah, be softer. Just, to me, that's the best word I can think of right now.
And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but what I'm picking up here is that you're really talking about the value of the relationship that needs to be built with these kids.
Yes. And I will say that that has always been my like number one goal being a teacher. I've always wanted to create relationships with them.
Yeah. And I think if we come back to the idea that, you know, everybody wants to be loved, and, mm-hmm. you know, maybe at different ages that love needs to be expressed differently. But I think you're really finding that based off of the description that you're giving me here. So thank you for sharing. At what point along this journey, you know, jumping from high school to elementary, and maybe it hasn't clicked yet, but at what point have you decided that this is it, teaching's for you?
So I decided I wanted to be a teacher basically when I was in grade 12, but I also knew that I was at a stage in my life where if I went to school, I would have dropped out in the first month. I was just in my kind of, I need to get the heck out of my town. I need to go explore. I need to be me, blah, blah, blah. So I had filled out forms to apply to university and stuff, and I just never sent them in. I decided, no, I need a break. And in that meantime, I taught a dance school and I got certified to teach snowboard lessons. So I found I was teaching in a few other ways. And throughout those years where I taught other things, I was like, no, yeah, teaching is definitely my calling. So I went back to university back to school, went to university for the first time 3 years after I originally graduated from high school. And I actually struggled with what I was certain in university about teaching as well. In my second year, I was quite tempted to drop out, actually. And it had nothing to do with the school system and teaching. Like, I still really wanted to do that. I just like wasn't loving university. So that was just like a self problem I was having. But I would say my very first year of teaching kind of like solidified that that was something that I loved to do, even though it was so challenging. My first year teaching was in England, and my internship was at this like amazing school in Saskatchewan. All the kids were so well behaved and they were great and blah, blah, blah. I was like, oh, this teaching thing's going to be a breeze. And I went to England to teach my first year. And I taught in what you would call the ghetto of England. It was a place called Luton, and it was just really rough. The kids did not like school, hated teachers. Like, it was a hard place to be. And the very first, like, they have a week there where they, you know, bring all the teachers in and explain how the school year is going to work, get you prepared in your classroom, such and such. And they were warning the new teachers to not be nice to the kids. And there is me and this another guy from Saskatchewan actually ended up being there, which was crazy. But we're looking at each other and we're like, not be nice to the kids? Like, what is going on here? Like, we've always been taught to build relationships with students, right? And they're just like, don't let your guard down. They'll take advantage of you, blah, blah, blah. And at this point, we're like, what did we get into? But my very first day teaching in England, I had a kid pick up his table and threaten to throw at me. And these teachers had also told us, like, don't back down from these kids, right? They'll take advantage of you. So I was like, go ahead, throw it at me. Meanwhile, I'm shitting my pants, you know? And he sets the table, like, big guy too, sets the table back down and goes, ha ha ha, you're all right, miss. Like, they're just testing you, right? And it's because they're, England recruits tons of teachers to come teach because no one wants to teach over there. And so they are so used to teachers coming and teaching for a few weeks and then leaving because it sucks so bad there. And the students are rude. So they test you really hard those first few weeks, the kids, right? Because they think that you're just going to up and leave anyway. So once you can kind of prove that you're there to stay, they kind of let up a little bit. But throughout that year, I probably made the best relationships with the most troubled of kids in that school. And just being able to do that was really, really special to me because I was kind of like a black sheep growing up. Like, I wasn't a terrible, terrible kid, but I wasn't a good kid. And I just always needed somebody to just like offer me a hand and kind of help me get by. And I was just like, so in my element being able to do that for so many other kids there that just they truly needed somebody to just like be on their side and to be able to talk to and help them through things because they're dealing with a lot of shit over there. It's just it's a tough town to be in, and I just feel for a lot of those kids over there still. And yeah, just being able to be their person for them was really cool. And I just thought like, wow, I can't wait to do that with like the next group of kids and the next group of kids, you know?
That's such a powerful story that you share there, Sam. And it really, again, it reinforces the point that, you know, the kids that put up that front and act the toughest, those are the kids that need the most love.
Yes. And they don't want you to know it, but they secretly do, right? They have a way of communicating it.
Absolutely. And you shared this incredible story about taking that leap and going to England. And before we kind of unpack maybe what you could transfer from there back to where you are now, why did you decide to take that leap and go there?
Well, travel's always been a huge part of my life. And I just thought, what a great opportunity. Like, I'm fresh out of school. I had nothing holding me back, right? You don't have a job. I didn't have a significant other. I was going to need to move because I just finished university. So I thought, why not? Like, right now is the best time, I thought, to try a new adventure. So I originally wanted to go somewhere warm. To me, that was going to be the coolest option. But England just proposed itself to be one of the kind of like right in my lap at a career fair. And I thought, why not? So
that's incredible. And was there anything from when you were a snowboard teacher that helped you along the way and helped you as an educational teacher in classrooms?
Yes. And I think not only snowboarding, but physical education in general, I think, doesn't get the attention it deserves in this aspect. Because you think of, so snowboarding, if we go to it, you can snowboard on your heel edge, you can snowboard on your toe edge. But before you even get to snowboarding, being on any edge, anything at all, you got to learn how to strap up. You got to learn how to stand on 2 feet. You got to learn how to balance. You got to learn which way your shoulders are supposed to go, right? So it really takes you back to basics and learning how to explain things. So when you go to tell a student how to write a sentence, Well, before you even start with a sentence, they need to know capital letters, they need to know punctuation, they need to know nouns, they need to know verbs, right? So it just kind of made you think about all the little things that we almost skip right over and making sure that people understand the basics of and their fundamentals.
See, and I know the struggle of skipping over because the first time I went snowboarding was at Mount Norquay and I decided I would get a lesson, but my lesson was at 10 o'clock and I thought, oh, I have an hour to get good on my own. And, you know, the strapping up wasn't too hard for me because I was already an adult and the standing up wasn't too hard for me because I was already an adult. But the concept of shifting from your heel edge to your toe edge, I flew down that mountain so fast and crashed right into the fences. And I remember sitting there for 45 minutes making a choice to either get up and keep trying or a choice to pack up and go home. And I'm so happy that I decided to keep trying because the lesson was awesome. And I learned so much more about how to stop, which is probably the most important part.
Yes.
But you're so right that there's so many things that you can just pick up in life that transfer and you get that fundamental pedagogy that transfers into other aspects of your life as well. And what a great example along that. So in making that leap and going to England, what did you learn from teaching in England that you've brought back to Canada with you?
Definitely classroom management, because like I said, my internship was, I just had such good classes that, you know, if I told them to be quiet, they were quiet. That was it. In England, it was not that at all. It was fighting with kids. It was breaking up fights with kids. It was learning how to keep track of them all and stuff. It was just so different than what I had witnessed before or what I grew up with, because I grew up in a town of 900 people. So my class was 28 kids, I think, and our whole school had just over 200. And then the school I taught at in England was bigger than my entire town. So there was, I think, 920 kids or something in the school. It was insane. It was huge. And so just learning how to even function and orchestrate in a school and class that size was really kind of grounding, I guess, in a way. And we really learned how to work with other teachers actually there, which was a cool thing. So there was heads of different departments, right? It was such a big school. So in our English department, which is essentially where I lived, we had 10 teachers, and it was really cool to have when we had staff meetings, you had your staff meetings with your department, because most people only taught one subject there because it was such a big school, right? And so it was really cool to just collaborate and learn with everyone and plan together and stuff. And it was definitely the closest staff I'd ever worked with. And I think it's because we went through so much trauma together, honestly, as a staff. Like, there's some crazy things that happened in that school. It was really cool. They became like a family and definitely learned how to collaborate and work with each other.
And it sounds like you've learned so many things along the way. And one of the things that you mentioned there was that grounded mindset. And so this is a bit of a tough question, but what values have you started to put together based off of your experiences?
I probably, one of my biggest values is teaching myself, I guess, how to calm down and not get so wrapped up in everything. I am always in the mindset of go, go, go. And like, if there's work to be done, there's work for me to do. And so whenever there's papers on my desk that need to be marked, or there's somebody that needs help, or there's this and that, like, I just always feel like there's something for me to do. And if there is something for me to do, I need to do it. And the last 2 years, especially, I've learned that I cannot do it all. And that's when I have really bad mental health areas in my life, is when I try to be go, 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 and I try to do it all. So what I've learned the most the last, I don't know, 10 years or so, is just really taking time to myself and knowing that it's okay to do nothing, which is just, it's the hardest thing for me to do. Like, even if I sit down and I watch a show or watch a movie, I have a very hard time getting through a movie, because I'm like, well, I could be sweeping the floors while I watch the movie, or I could be doing the dishes while I watch the movie. And I just always have that go, go, go in my head, and just learning how to try to be at peace with that and calm myself down has been the best thing for me the last year. The last 2 years, I'd say, is when I've started really growing in that aspect. And it's made my relationship with myself, with my significant other, with my family, with my friends, so much better, because I don't shut myself out anymore. So it gets to points where I'm so busy, then you crash, right? And then you don't talk to anyone. and you have a bad week and you sit inside in the dark and let the world pass by. And now that I don't try to tackle everything all at once, I find I'm just a much more enjoyable person to be around. I've learned to manage my emotions better, learned to task manage better. And, you know, if there's papers sitting on my desk that I haven't got to this week, that's okay, because there's a whole nother week I can get to it. And yeah, just learning how to like prioritize myself and my space and my time has been really, really, really crucial to my growth, I think, in the last few years.
Yeah. And you're really speaking to the mindfulness and having patience and
yes.
approaching things with grace. And have you noticed since that focus, has it translated to your classroom?
Yes. I think at the very start, so I just started the role this year, and I think I got so wrapped up in it the first month that I almost forgot about everything that I've been trying to practice myself about patience and, you know, time to myself and stuff. So my first month, I struggled a little bit. Just, it was so much new stuff, you know, and I was so unprepared. They called me on a Friday. They're like, hey, we're opening this position because we have an influx of kids. Can you start Monday? And I was just like, yeah, okay. So I had no time to, you know, prepare and get a plan made for myself for the year, and just felt like I was running on eight legs. And then after a few weeks, I had to be like, oh, okay, this isn't working. Like, let's take a step back. What do I need to do here? And I'm pretty sure I just took a sick day and I was like, I need to just recuperate and figure some stuff out and calm down, and then, you know, remind myself of all the things I've been trying to implement regarding my mental health and structure and patience.
Yeah, it sounds like you've also had a lot of change in the last couple of years. And so how have you gone about accepting that change and working with that change?
Well, see, that's a funny question because I'm not very good at it, but I do it a lot, which is funny because I used to be so spontaneous and go with the wind. And then I have found the older I've gotten, the more I'm a bit resistant to change. But I keep changing my life and moving around the world and whatever. So I don't know, something's working, I guess. But I don't really know if I have it figured out of what works with change and what doesn't. I have my few constants in my life, and those have really helped. So my dog, I've had for 4 years now. He goes with me everywhere, every move I've made, everything. So he's just kind of like my comfort buddy, you know, like anywhere I am, any struggle I'm facing, he's there, which is really cool. And health and fitness, you know, it's the one thing I am in direct control of. I start every single day. I wake up, go for a walk, doesn't matter about the weather. Then I know I've done one good thing for myself in the day, you know? And the better I feel about myself, the better I am to everyone else. So if I feel healthy and strong and happy and confident, I'm a better person. But when I feel like garbage and I eat like trash and I neglect working on my body, then that directly affects my mental health. And I don't feel like I'm as good of a person. So I would say my ways of dealing with change is focusing on the things that I can maintain consistency in while I'm going through that change. So yeah, my dog and my health and fitness and cooking and things like that. Those are I clutch to those when I'm going through my changes.
And you bring up such a good point that building the habit of waking up every day and just going for a walk is something that you need for your mind and for your body. And I'm sure every day when you wake up, going for that walk is something really easy for you to do, right? Or there's got to be those hard days where sometimes you wake up and that walk's tough to get to.
Honestly, not really. I woke up for work late just this week, actually. And for some, my alarm was going off, but it wasn't making any noise. And it was the strangest thing. Anyway, I had this great debate if I had time to go walk my dog real quick, which I did not. It was 8:30. I woke up at, like, there was clearly no time to go for a walk. I live 20 minutes away from my work. But like, that's how important it is to me that, like, that's my routine. And I was just a little bit off all day because I didn't do it. And it is like, I don't even question it in the morning. That's just what I get up and do.
And it makes such a big difference in even those routines with kids, right? And so
yes,
that's clearly translated from your personal life of going for walks every morning to establishing routines in classrooms and with the people you work with. So what kind of routines have you put in place or practices that have impacted not just your classroom on top of those walks, but also your life.
In the classroom, what do? We have Word Wednesday. Every Wednesday, we roll a word dice, and then I give them a list of words with definitions from that word. And we do speed math on Wednesdays as well. Wednesdays is clearly my routine day. And it's funny that the kids get like very dependent on those schedules. Hey, like if we start class on Wednesday and we don't do word dice, the kids are like, but when are we going to do this?
Yeah, they're always the first to know. Yep.
They are. And like, that's a good thing. It's crazier. Even if like I sub in the afternoon sometimes because my contract's only in the morning, and I'll go sub in the kindergarten room a lot. And holy moly, those kids, they do not want to go off schedule one bit. Like if she leaves me a different sub plan than something that she normally does, the kids are like, whoa, 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 this is not right. Miss R usually does this with us. I have to say, I know, I'm so sorry, but she left me a little bit different of a plan today, and they are just not impressed.
And so with that, you're sounding a bit more comfortable in your position you're in, and you've talked a lot about, you know, the challenges of overcoming deciding what to go to school for and taking that leap and going to England. So where are we at now with you and your career path and how things are going?
I do not think I would take another role in or another contract in elementary next year. It's been a really cool way of getting to know different ages of kids. And I'm really grateful for that because, you know, with everything going on right now in the education system, if I were still in high school or still teaching high school, I don't know if I would have noticed the dire need for funding, because those elementary schools need it so badly. In my class, and I don't even have that big of a class, I have 22, but about 5 of them cannot read at their grade level. And it's very, very hard to instruct a class when I know that 3 of them for sure are not getting it. I'm going to need to sit down with them individually and explain, and probably explain it for the next week, what the assignment is that we're doing. And sorry, I kind of went a different direction with that, but yeah, so if I were to teach next year, I would love to go back to high school. And I think I'd be a very much better. I'm very much better. I'm much better teacher.
We're getting there.
Now
we're getting there.
With my experience in elementary. Just, I don't know. It kind of gives you the whole world view, you know, of seeing what it's like in every grade and
for sure
stuff.
Now, education and teaching, it's similar, but it's not the only thing that you do, Sam, right? Do you want to talk about the other activities that you're doing?
Sure. I own and manage Schools Athletics. So I do online and in-person training, physical training and nutrition. So I have my ISSA, which is my training certification, and my precision nutrition course. So I plan and create workout programs and courses for people to follow, and I coach them through that, and same with their nutrition, and I help them reach their goals, whether it's weight loss or muscle gain or strength, or if they're training for, you know, marathons or events and stuff like that. So I run that in my afternoons, which is why I only work a part-time contract right now. And then I also make jewelry on the side. I own another little business called Stones and Poem.
That's incredible. And you have so much on the go that it just leads me to ask one thing. And what's inspired you, or who has inspired you to kind of take that journey?
Oh, which one? My brother inspires me a lot. He is one of the hardest workers I know. He's got probably 5 minutes in his day planned out. He is very similar to me in how our work ethic is. He's a teacher as well. And he's also a highly certified basketball coach, and he's moved out to Ottawa now, and he coaches a academy out there. And he's also, you know, he's got a girlfriend, and he does his own health and fitness workout stuff that he's passionate about. So he's just got so much on the go too, and he's just got so much passion about life, and he's really just inspiring to be around. Honestly, I probably don't tell him that enough, but he works so hard and he cares so much about everything that he does, especially in his role as a teacher and as a coach. And just watching how he goes the extra mile for everyone is really, really awesome just to see.
That sounds like such an incredible connection that the two of you have.
He's truly, yeah, my best friend.
That's amazing. And thank you for sharing everything along the way so far. When we look at all of it and we talk about that grounded mindset or that risk that you took when you took the leap and went to England, or even coming back and adjusting to all of that change, what advice would you give to people that are aspiring educators or maybe aspiring people to get into the fitness industry or make their own jewelry, travel, take that leap?
You really got to just trust your intuitions. You got to trust your gut, and you can't care about what everyone else is going to say about it. I've made a lot of moves and a lot of decisions that maybe didn't work out, or maybe it looks as if I failed because I've moved back or I've done things differently, but I wouldn't change a single thing that I've ever done for a different outcome, because I've learned and grew so much through every experience I've ever had. I thought I was going to move out to England and that was going to be my life. I was pretty prepared for that. And I honestly, I just really did not like the school system there. I ended up realizing how much I love Canada. We have it really good here in so many ways. I moved out to Kelowna most recently for 4 months. I thought, again, that was going to be a final move, but I fell in love with a boy back home. So I moved back home and just realized like how much I grew up in a small town, right? And I now live in a small town with my boyfriend, and I'm so appreciative of a small town community. And it's funny how, you know, we spend our lives running from where we grew up and just end up back here half the time. But yeah, I would say my biggest life advice for anyone is to just try anything and everything and fall in love with as many things as you can, because that's going to be how you find yourself. That's going to be how you find your passions and what's important to you. I've, you know, dabbled in 100 different careers and I'm only 30 years old, and I ended up coming back to teaching. You know, like, it's the world will put you where it wants to, and I don't think there's any harm in trying and failing and figuring it all out and just
And I absolutely love that message, so thank you so much for sharing. Hey, if people want to connect with you and learn more about potentially getting coached through fitness, through some nutrition, buy some of your jewelry, what's the best way for them to get a hold of you?
On Instagram, I'm Skoz, S-K-O-Z underscore. And through there, you can basically find any other thing that you want to. I operate my coaching and stuff through there. And then from there, well, also on Instagram, it's just at Stones and a Poem. And that's the jewelry stuff. But yeah, I document most of my life on Skoz. And yeah, I'd love to chat with anyone that has any questions about anything or just wants to keep up with my little life.
That's so awesome. Thank you so much for sharing. And before we wrap up here today, any final thoughts that you would just want to share with anybody listening?
There's not enough passion left in the world, I think. That's what I'm realizing from these kids. And I hope to inspire some passion, honestly. If that's anything that people can take through this, is that just love big and try things and don't be afraid to fail. And it's okay to, you know, put your heart and soul out into something and it not work out the way you wanted, because ultimately you're going to find what you do love and what is for you the more you try things, you know, and we just need to not be scared. Don't be afraid of being judged.
I love that.
You've been listening to The Elemental Educator. Our aim is to illuminate optimal educational practices on a global scale. And second, we want to shine a light on the expertise and knowledge that Tyler brings to educational institutions. He's not just a talking head. He's a practicing educator, a school principal, armed with a master's in educational administration, and on the brink of completing his doctorate. We hope you've enjoyed the show. Make sure to like, rate, review, and subscribe. We'll be back soon. But in the meantime, find us on Instagram, Facebook, and X at Elemental Educator. And to contact us, fire off an email. See what I did there? Fire off. Okay. Send an email to elementaleducator@gmail.com. See you next time on The Elemental Educator.